As a scholar, he was equally proficient, and had no trouble gaining admission to study physics and astronomy at the University of Chicago, where, coincidentally, the head of the department was now Albert Michelson. There he was selected to be one of the first Rhodes Scholars at Oxford. 3 years of English life evidently turned his head, for he returned to Wheaton in 1913, wearing an Inverness cape, smoking a pipe, and talking with a peculiarly orotund accent, not quite British, but not quite not, that would remain with him for life. And though he later claimed to have passed most of the second decade of the century practicing law in Kentucky, in fact he worked as a high school teacher and basketball coach in New Albany, Indiana, before belatedly attaining his doctorate and passing briefly through the army. He arrived in France 1 month before the armistice, and almost certainly never heard a shot fired in anger. In 1919, now aged 30, he moved to California and took up a position at the Mount Wilson Observatory near Los Angeles. Swiftly, and more than a little unexpectedly, he became the most outstanding astronomer of the 20th century. It is worth pausing for a moment to consider just how little was known of the cosmos at this time. Astronomers today believe there are perhaps 140 billion galaxies in the visible universe. That's a huge number, much bigger than merely saying it would lead you to suppose. If galaxies were frozen peas, it would be enough to fill a large auditorium, the old Boston Garden, say, or the Royal Albert Hall. An astrophysicist named Bruce Gregory has actually computed this. In 1919, when Hubble first put his head to the eyepiece, the number of these galaxies that were known to us was exactly one, the Milky Way. Everything else was thought to be either part of the Milky Way itself, or one of many distant, peripheral puffs of gas. Hubble quickly demonstrated how wrong that belief was. Over the next decade, Hubble tackled two of the most fundamental questions of the universe: how old is it, and how big? To answer both, it is necessary to know two things: how far away certain galaxies are, and how fast they are flying away from us, what is known as their recessional velocity. The redshift gives the speed at which galaxies are retiring, but doesn't tell us how far away they are to begin with. For that, you need what are known as standard candles, stars whose brightness can be reliably calculated and used as benchmarks to measure the brightness, and hence relative distance, of other stars. Hubble's luck was to come along soon after an ingenious woman named Henrietta Swan Leavitt had figured out a way to do so. Leavitt worked at the Harvard College Observatory as a computer, as they were known. Computers spent their lives studying photographic plates of stars and making computations, hence the name. It was little more than drudgery by another name, but it was as close as women could get to real astronomy at Harvard, or indeed pretty much anywhere in those days. The system, however unfair, did have certain unexpected benefits. It meant that half the finest minds available were directed to work that would otherwise have attracted little reflective attention, and it ensured that women ended up with an appreciation of the fine structure of the cosmos that often eluded their male counterparts.